I still can't believe what happened that night. It was the most terrifying experience of my life. My name's Kimberly, and I'm originally from a small town in Iowa. I moved to the city about a year ago, after getting a job as a paralegal at a law firm downtown. I had only been living in my rental house for about 4 months when this happened. It was the middle of the night, and I had woken up to get a drink of water from the kitchen. As I stood there sipping, I suddenly heard what sounded like muffled cries coming from somewhere. Thinking it could have been coming from outside, I walked over and peeked out the living room window, but the street was empty. That's when I heard a thump coming from above me. The only thing above the living room is the attic. The muffled cries continued. I slowly walked over to the main hallway, which is where the attic door was, and stepped underneath it. That's when the cries abruptly stopped, as if whoever was making them knew I was listening. I had no idea what to make of the strange sounds or how someone, or something, could be up there. I stood frozen, straining to hear any other noises in the stillness. I felt a cold chill run down my body, despite the warm night. Something was very wrong. I didn't know what to do. Calling the police sounded like the logical thing to do at the time, so I crept back to the kitchen and grabbed my phone off the counter, ready to dial 911. But then I realized that I would have sounded like some crazy person due to calling 911 just because I simply heard noises in my attic. So, to avoid coming across as a nutcase, I decided to try and gather evidence first. As quietly as I could, I tiptoed back over to stand under the attic door in the ceiling, holding my breath, pointing my phone towards the door to record any sounds. For a minute, all I heard was silence. The sounds had stopped completely. I stood there waiting to see if I could hear anything else, but there was only stillness. I wondered if I had imagined the whole thing. Finally, I felt like I could write it off as just me being half asleep. Even though I was still feeling creeped out, I headed back to my room, shut the door, and climbed into bed. Maybe I would call the landlord about it in the morning, just to be safe. I closed my eyes, hoping I could fall back asleep after what just happened. I tossed and turned, but sleep wouldn't come. The image of that attic door and the ceiling kept flashing through my mind. The thought of someone actually being up in the attic wouldn't leave my mind. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was still in danger. After what felt like hours of lying awake paralyzed by fear, I heard a creaking sound coming from the ceiling in the hallway. My eyes shot open. The attic door was opening. I bolted upright in bed, my heart ready to beat out of my chest. That's when the crying started up again, clearer now. Frozen in terror, I listened to the attic door swing open. Next came the sound that will haunt me forever. The wooden ladder unfolding and creaking as someone climbed down rung by rung. The crying grew louder as the intruder climbed down the ladder and then began walking towards the direction of my bedroom. I wanted to scream, but no sound came out. I was literally frozen in place. This was really happening. Someone had been hiding in my attic, and now they were inside my house. I cowered in the corner of my bed trembling, hot tears streaming down my face, not knowing what to do. I sat there paralyzed, not even breathing, as the footsteps slowly walked down the hall toward my room. The crying grew deafeningly loud until it sounded like the woman was right outside my door. Then, silence. I stared wide-eyed into the darkness, waiting for the intruder to burst in. But nothing happened. The silence was almost more frightening than the sounds. The simple fact of not knowing what was going on behind my bedroom door filled me with terror. Every creak of the house made me flinch. I have no idea how much time had passed since the sound stopped, but I had finally gathered enough courage to get up and slowly turn the lock with trembling hands and cracked open the door. Peering into the hallway, I saw nothing. There was no sign of a crying woman. My body was still trembling from the intense level of fear as I walked out of my bedroom. I peeked out into the dark hallway to see if the attic door was still open, but it was closed. It was as if it had never been opened. I never believed in ghosts or the supernatural before, but I have no logical explanation for what happened that night, other than maybe a squatter was living in my attic. But that still doesn't fully convince me. The sounds, the ladder, the crying woman, it had all seemed so terrifyingly real in the moment. I didn't feel safe spending another night in that house. As soon as the sun came up, I packed my things and left. I decided right then to break my lease early and find a new place far away to start over. I called my sister, who lived about an hour away, and asked if I could stay at her place until I could find a new rental, which she was totally fine with, thankfully. I still wonder who or what was in my attic that night, but I never want to find out. My heart was pounding as I stepped onto the deserted train platform. I had stayed late at the office to finish a project, knowing I would be taking the last train home. The car was empty, except for me and a man sitting across from me. I tried to avoid eye contact, staring down at my phone, but I could feel his eyes on me. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up as I realized he was watching my every move. I'm Hannah, by the way. Just a regular 20-something trying to make it in the big city. I moved here a few years ago for a job opportunity, and I love the fast-paced lifestyle. But nights like this make me question if it's all worth it. I glanced up and met the man's gaze for a split second before he looked away. My instincts told me something was off. He didn't look away innocently. It was more like I had caught him doing something he shouldn't be. The train came to a stop, and I got up to exit. As I stood up, I noticed the man continued to sit there, not moving. My stop was next, but something told me to wait and see what he would do. As soon as the doors opened, I hesitated. The man stayed seated, but his eyes followed me. I stepped onto the platform, overwhelmed with anxiety. I walked briskly toward the exit. I didn't need to look back to feel his presence as the train pulled away. I could sense him behind me, even though I couldn't hear his footsteps over the sound of my own heels. My heart was racing, hoping to see anyone else around, any security or transit workers. But the place seemed deserted. Up ahead, the exit sign glowed red like a beacon. I just had to make it a little farther. I picked up my pace as I neared the exit, the tap of my heels echoing through the empty station. I was almost there. Just a few more yards and I would be back out on the street, where hopefully there would still be some people around despite the late hour. That's when I heard the distinct sound of footsteps behind me. My chest tightened as I realized the man was not only following me, but had quickened his pace. I couldn't help it. Against my better judgment, I turned around. And there he was, tall and imposing, his eyes locked on me. Our eyes met, and he didn't look away this time. He kept walking steadily toward me. His gaze was menacing. I abandoned all pretense of calm and broke into a run. I sprinted down the empty street, my heels clicking wildly on the pavement. I didn't dare look back again. However, I could hear the man's footsteps gaining on me and the sound of his heavy breaths. Up ahead, I spotted a 24-hour diner. I pushed myself harder, lungs burning, and reached the door just as a group of people exited the diner, laughing loudly. I tried to steady my breathing and appear calm as I slowed to a walk, merging into the group as they turned to walk down the street. My heart was still racing, but I felt a wave of relief being among others. I resisted the urge to turn around, unsure if the man was still behind me. As the group moved down the block, I stayed with them, comforted by their lively chatter and laughter. After a few minutes, I took a glance backward and didn't see the man. The group was approaching a busier street lined with bars and restaurants. The pavement was crowded with people, spilling in and out of various establishments. I said a silent prayer of thanks. I could have easily disappeared into the crowds there. I turned down the busy street, away from the safety of the group. I quickened my pace again, wanting to get far away, fast. My apartment was several blocks away, and I couldn't wait to put this night behind me. But the familiar fear crept up my spine once more. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was still being hunted. I took a longer route home, checking over my shoulder and crossing streets erratically to make sure I wasn't followed. Exhaustion was setting in, but the adrenaline kept me alert. I stuck to busier streets with people still milling about. I watched nervously as a few lone men passed me on the sidewalk. Thankfully, none of them were him. After what felt like forever, I reached my apartment building and punched in the key code with shaking hands. I rushed inside and up the stairs, not feeling fully safe until I was inside my apartment with the door locked behind me. I dropped my bag and leaned back against the door, finally allowing myself to break down. I sank to the floor as angry sobs consumed my body. I was furious with myself for staying late to finish work. I should have just come home at a reasonable hour. And I was angry at the man for making me feel so powerless, so afraid. I replayed the events over and over, imagining what could have happened if I hadn't escaped. Exhausted from all the adrenaline, I eventually dragged myself to bed. But sleep didn't come easy. I tossed and turned, wondering if he had followed me home. Wondering if he was out there, waiting to finish what he started. I knew one thing for sure. I would never again stay late at the office. It just wasn't worth it. I still get chills thinking back to that night a few months ago. I'm Lance, 20 years old, and at the time of this incident, my car was in the shop and was too broke to use any ride-sharing services, so walking was my cheapest alternative. I grew up and still live in the rougher side of town, where you always gotta keep your head on a swivel. Anyway, I had gone over my girlfriend's place that night. She only lives a few blocks away in one of them nicer gated communities. We hung out, watched a movie, and I left around 1 a.m. to walk home. Now, between her place and mine, I gotta cut through this dark alley for about 5 minutes before I get to the main street. There's no street lights or nothing, and honestly, it creeps me out. So I always jog with my headphones in and music blasting. This particular night, as I was hustling through, I noticed a guy walking towards me, wearing a hoodie, with the hood pulled up. I couldn't see his face because of the shadows. As we got closer, dude was just staring at me hard, looking me up and down. It gave me the creeps. I avoided eye contact and just kept jogging. When I took a quick glance back, I saw the guy had turned around and started speed walking after me. My heart dropped into my stomach. I picked up my pace, and so did he. Next thing I knew, we were in an all-out sprint. I didn't know what this guy wanted, but I wasn't gonna stick around to find out. I sprinted down that dark alley with this dude right on my heels. I didn't have time to pull down my headphones, but I could sense that he was closing in. During all this chaos, I was trying to figure out what to do. Thankfully, I know these streets well since I grew up here. I spotted a chain link fence up ahead and hauled myself up and over it without losing pace. I figured it would slow the creep down at least, but nope, he scaled it like it was nothing. So I kept running through this backyard, hopping another fence into someone's front yard. At this point, my lungs were on fire and my legs felt like jello. Fear and adrenaline kept me moving. I cut through a couple more yards before popping back onto the next street over. The main road was only a few blocks away now. I pushed myself into an all-out sprint. My cap and headphones flew off, but I didn't dare stop. I just had to make it to the main road. I finally emerged onto the bright lights of the main street, gasping for breath. I glanced back and didn't see the guy anymore, but I kept running. I wasn't going to risk him catching up. I had about 4 more blocks to get home. My building was just up ahead, and I gave it everything I had in me to run even faster to make it to the keypad on the front entrance. I scrambled to enter the key code due to being so nervous. I messed up the code a couple of times before finally getting it right. As soon as I got inside, I slammed the door shut behind me. I collapsed against the door, trying to catch my breath. My heart was pounding out of my chest. After a minute, I scrambled to peek out the front window, paranoid that I was followed or being watched. But the street looked empty. No sign of the creepy dude with the hoodie. I sank down to the floor, overwhelmed with relief, but still kinda in shock. As my adrenaline wore off, I started to process everything that just happened. Some stranger just chased me through the streets like prey. For what? To rob me? Kill me? Kidnap me? I shuddered thinking about what might have happened if he caught me. I could have disappeared and no one would have known what happened. As I sat there on the floor, shaking, my phone started buzzing in my pocket. I pulled it out and saw it was my girlfriend calling to check that I made it home safely. With a shaky voice, I told her everything that just happened. I spoke about being chased by the hooded man through the dark alleys. Even over the phone, I could sense her worry and fear as she listened. She asked if I was hurt or if he had caught up to me at all. I assured her I got away unharmed once I made it to the main street. She was relieved, but insisted we talk more about this in the morning when it's light out and safer. I promised her I would come by first thing so we could discuss everything that happened. After hanging up, I sat on the floor a little while longer, trying to process the traumatic events. My heart was still racing, even though I knew I was secure inside my building. The creepy man was still out there somewhere, but at least he didn't know where I lived. At least I don't think he did. I was safe for now. Exhausted, I eventually hauled myself off the floor, walked up to my apartment on the third floor, and collapsed into my bed. Since then, I try not to walk home that late, just to be safe. I never thought I'd be sharing a story like this, but after what I went through, I feel like I have to warn others, especially those who frequently use Uber or other ride-sharing services. It's so important to stay alert and trust your instincts when something feels off. I learned the hard way that a situation like mine can happen to anyone, no matter how safe you think you are. I'm a 24-year-old female grad student. I consider myself a responsible and cautious person, but that night, I found myself in a situation I never thought I'd be in. It was a Friday night, and I had gone to a house party with some friends from school. I wasn't really in the mood to go out, but they convinced me, saying I need to get out and socialize more. The party was at a nice house in a good neighborhood. I got there around 9 p.m., and there were already a lot of people. I had a few drinks and talked with friends and some new people. As the night went on, I started to feel tired. I had a busy week of classes and studying, and the alcohol wasn't helping. Around 1 a.m., I decided it was time to go home. My friends were still having fun, so I said goodbye and went outside to order an Uber. The app said my driver, a man named Stan, would arrive in a silver Toyota Camry in about 5 minutes. I waited outside, looking forward to getting home and going to bed. When the car arrived, I got in the back seat and said hello to the driver. He briefly said hello back and started driving. As we pulled away from the house, I noticed we weren't going the right way. The streets didn't look familiar, and it seemed like we were heading towards a more remote area. I asked the driver if he was following the GPS, but he just mumbled something I couldn't understand and kept driving. Feeling pretty nervous, I checked my phone, but the signal was weak. I had a bad feeling in my stomach as I realized the danger I might be in. I told the driver that I thought we were going the wrong way and that I wanted him to pull over and let me out. He ignored me and kept driving, not even looking back at me. At this point, I was starting to freak out, and I knew I needed to find a way out of the situation. I thought about calling 911, but I was scared of how the driver would react. I quietly started looking for anything in the car that I could use to defend myself if I had to. As we turned onto a dark, empty street, I remembered the small bottle of pepper spray I always carried in my purse for self-defense. The driver picked up speed, and I knew I had to do something quickly. I took a deep breath, reached over, and aimed the pepper spray at the driver's eyes, pressing down as hard as I could. The driver yelled in pain and grabbed his face, resulting in him losing control of the car. We went off the road and crashed into a tree. The impact was so hard that I almost passed out. I was dizzy and my body hurt, but I knew I had to get out of the car. I managed to open the door and stumble out, even though I felt like I was going to collapse. Some people who lived nearby had heard the crash and came running over to see what happened. I was beyond relief to see them. I told them that the man in the car had tried to kidnap me, and some of them started calling 911 right away. The police and ambulance got there quickly. I was taken to the hospital to get checked out, and I told the police everything that happened. They said they would investigate the driver thoroughly. I found out later that he had a history of complaints from other passengers, but Uber hadn't done anything about it. This incident happened back in the spring of 2021, but I can still remember every detail. I wanted to share my story to let others know how important it is to be aware of the risks and always put your safety first. If something doesn't feel right, don't hesitate to take action and get help. It could be the difference between life and death. I work as a senior cybersecurity analyst. I'm 36 years old and have been working in the field for over a decade now. I got into the industry because I've always had a knack for computers and problem solving. There's something thrilling about the challenge of outsmarting hackers and protecting sensitive data from cybercriminals. 2 years ago, I was leading a team investigating a massive ransomware attack against one of our highest profile clients. I can't name the client, but they're a Fortune 500 company with a huge online presence. If word got out that they had been hacked, it would be devastating to their business and reputation. As my team dug deeper into the attack, it became clear we were up against an extremely sophisticated and malicious hacker group. Their code was incredibly complex, and they had covered their tracks well. But I was determined to hunt them down, no matter how long it took. Cybersecurity is like a chess match. It's all about staying one step ahead of your opponent, and I hate losing. About a month into the investigation, strange things started happening. It began with the unmarked white van that appeared outside my apartment. At first, I didn't think much of it. In a big city, vans and vehicles are always coming and going. But then I noticed a van parked there every single night when I got home, no matter how late. One evening, when I returned from work around 11 p.m., I had an unsettling realization. I was being followed. I first spotted them a block from my apartment. Three figures, wearing black hoodies with hoods pulled low, keeping a steady distance behind me as I walked. My instincts screamed danger. I picked up the pace, my adrenaline starting to kick in. I could hear their footsteps gaining speed as well. As I neared my building, they suddenly surrounded me. I'm not a small guy, but they loomed menacingly over me. I demanded to know what they wanted. The tallest one spoke in a low, threatening voice. He warned me that I was getting involved in something that could be very bad for my health. His meaning was clear. This was a death threat. They knew who I was, who I worked for, and the investigation I was leading. Let's just say I got their message loud and clear. Just as suddenly as they appeared, they vanished. I hurried inside, double locking the door behind me. I honestly couldn't sleep that night, as I tossed and turned, my mind reeling. I wasn't just scared for myself, but for the safety of my team. We were clearly in far more danger than I had realized. The next morning, the threatening emails began flooding my inbox. They were from anonymous, untraceable accounts. The messages contained attachments, surveillance photos of my parents, my sister and her family, even an ex-girlfriend I hadn't spoken to in years. The hackers had eyes everywhere. They made it clear that they could get to anyone I loved, anytime they wanted, unless I dropped the investigation immediately. I was deeply shaken. It was one thing to threaten me directly, but to drag my family and loved ones into this twisted game was beyond terrifying. They had taken the fight to a heinous new level. In a moment of raw panic, I considered going to the police, but a tiny, ruthless voice in my head warned me that if I did, I would surely be signing my own death warrant and putting my family at even greater risk. I went to work in a daze, unable to focus on anything except the situation I now found myself in. I called a private meeting with my boss and laid everything out. The death threat, the emails, the photos, my very real fear that the hacker group would follow through on their warnings if I didn't back down. To my relief, My boss was understanding, even sympathetic. He said I had done the right thing by coming to him. He agreed that I needed to step back from the investigation for my own safety and that of my loved ones. He said the company would put their full resources into completing the investigation and bringing the hackers to justice, but it was simply too dangerous for me to remain involved. Reluctantly, I agreed. I felt like I was abandoning my team and letting the hackers win, but I knew I had no choice. I took a leave of absence from work and didn't return for over a month until I felt certain enough time had passed and the threat was lifted. Even then, I found myself constantly looking over my shoulder, wondering if they were still watching me, still intent on making me pay for my role in the investigation. Gradually, the constant fear and paranoia faded, and life returned to something resembling normalcy. It's been 2 years since that investigation, and I haven't had any further issues. I haven't been clued in on the details of the investigation, but I'm assuming the good guys won. Hopefully. My name is Leo, and I'm a 20-year-old college student studying business. To help pay for tuition and living expenses, I work the night shift at a 24-hour convenience store, a few short miles from my campus. The pay isn't great, but it helps make ends meet. Plus, the late hours work well with my class schedule. It was around 2 a.m. on a Tuesday night in October. Tuesdays are usually pretty dead, especially this late. We might get a handful of customers picking up snacks or beer, but that's about it. I was stocking shelves and facing products, trying to stay busy and awake. The door chimed and I glanced over to see a man enter the store. He looked to be in his early 50s with shaggy hair and a scruffy beard. His clothes were dirty and disheveled. He walked up to the counter, his eyes darting around. I asked if I could help him find anything. The man ignored my question and demanded to use the phone. I explained that we didn't have a public phone, but he insisted there was one in the back and that he needed to use it. His voice was erratic and he seemed agitated. I again told him, as calmly and politely as I could, that we had no phone he could use. At this, the man became angry. He raised his voice, saying that I was lying to him, that he knew there was a phone, and I had to let him use it. He slammed his hands on the counter, making me jump. My heart started pounding, but I tried to stay composed. I said firmly that he needed to leave the store immediately. The man glared at me and stormed off toward the back of the store. I came out from behind the counter and followed him, repeatedly telling him to leave. When we reached the back of the store, the man spun around to face me. I froze when I saw the knife in his hand. He ordered me to give him all the money from the register. His eyes looked wild and desperate. I put my hands up and said I would cooperate. As I walked back to the register, I discreetly reached for the silent alarm button under the counter. But in my nervous state, I accidentally knocked over a stack of paper cups. The man shouted at me, suspicious of what I was doing. I tried to assure him it was just an accident, but he didn't believe me. He jabbed a knife toward me, hurting me away from the counter and into the stockroom in the back. I was ordered to go in there as he closely followed from behind. He closed the door and wedged a mop handle under it, preventing it from opening. My mind was reeling from how crazy this whole situation was. I was trapped in this room with an armed man who was clearly insane and dangerous. I racked my brain for a way out, but I just couldn't think straight. The man started rummaging through the shelves, muttering to himself. I told him he could take whatever he wanted, pleading with him to just grab what he needs and leave. He turned to me with a crazed look and asked if this is where they kept the bodies. Confused, I said I had no idea what he was talking about. He became more irate, convinced that I was in on some conspiracy. He grabbed me and shook me, the knife inches from my face, screaming at me to tell him the truth. Even though I was terrified, I yelled back, saying that I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Suddenly, I heard police sirens approaching. The man heard them too. Still gripping me tight, he pulled me out of the stockroom and back into the store. Through the windows, I could see red and blue lights flashing. The man dragged me to the front door and peered out. When he saw the police cars, he flew into a rage. He shoved me to the floor and started yelling about how I had ratted him out. I tried to scramble away, but he lunged at me with the knife. White-hot pain seared from my side. In the chaos, I managed to kick him off me and scramble behind the counter. The police barged in with guns drawn. They ordered the man to drop the knife, but he charged at them. Two shots rang out, and the man fell to the floor. I huddled behind the counter, clutching the right side of my ribcage, my whole body shaking uncontrollably. The police called for an ambulance. I don't remember much after that. Shock and blood loss made everything hazy, and I think I ended up passing out. I spent a few days in the hospital recovering from the stab wound. The police said the man had a history of mental illness and drug abuse. It's been 6 months since that night. Physically, I've healed, but the psychological scars remain. I have nightmares and panic attacks. I quit my job at the store. Even going out at night fills me with intense anxiety now. So last summer, I decided to check out this abandoned factory that was about a 30-minute drive from where I live. Currently, I'm 23 years old, and I've always been the kind of guy who's been into urban exploration. This factory had been on my radar for a while. The place was a total wreck, with broken windows and walls covered in vines and stuff. I knew it was probably a dumb idea to go there alone, especially at night. But you know how it is when you're young and dumb. You think you're invincible. As I stood there in front of this massive, run-down building, I couldn't help but feel a bit creeped out. It was like the factory was giving off this weird vibe, almost like it was telling me to get lost. But I was too stubborn to listen, so I just took a deep breath, grabbed my flashlight, and headed inside. The air inside was disgusting and musty, and every step I took stirred up clouds of dust that made me cough up a storm. It was a mess, with piles of old junk, rusty machines, and walls covered in graffiti. The deeper I went into the factory, the more freaked out I got. It wasn't just the eerie silence or the subtle movements I'd see in my peripheral. It was my gut screaming at me to get the hell out of there. As I pushed deeper into the factory, trying to shake off the creepy vibes, I started to notice some weird stuff. At first, it was just small things, like footprints in the dust that looked fresh, or the feeling that someone was watching me from the dark corners. But then I heard a soft, shuffling sound coming from somewhere up ahead. I froze, scared out of my mind, as I strained my ears to listen. I heard it again, louder this time, and I could have sworn it sounded like footsteps. I'll admit, I was scared to death at that point. I mean, who wouldn't be? I was all alone in this creepy-ass factory, and now it sounded like someone else was in there with me. Part of me wanted to just turn tail and run, but another part of me was curious. I had to know what was making that noise. So, like an idiot, I kept going. I followed the sound, my flashlight beam bouncing off the walls as I moved through the dark, empty rooms. And then I saw him. There, at the end of the long hallway, was a man. He was tall and thin, with stringy hair and deep-socket eyes. And in his hand, he held a huge, gleaming knife. I don't think I've ever been more terrified in my life. I just stood there, frozen, as the man stared at me from the shadows. And then he started moving towards me, slowly at first, but then faster and faster, raising that knife like he was ready to strike. That's when my fight or flight instinct kicked in, and you better believe I chose flight. I spun around and ran like hell. I could hear the man behind me, his footsteps echoing off the walls as he chased me through the dark corridors of the factory. I had no idea where I was going. I just knew I had to get away. I ran blindly, taking turns at random, praying that I wouldn't hit a dead end. The whole time, I could feel the man getting closer. All I could hear was his heavy breathing and grunting, mixed with my feet hitting the floor as I ran. At one point, I looked over my shoulder, and I swear to you, the guy was right behind me. I could see the glint of his knife in the dim light, and the crazed look in his eyes. It was like being chased by Michael Myers, except this was real life, and I was a dumbass who had walked right into it. It felt like I had been running forever. My lungs were burning, and my legs felt like jelly, but I couldn't stop. I knew that if I did, I was a dead man. And then, just when I thought I couldn't go on any longer, I saw a glimmer of light up ahead, shining through a crack in the wall. It was my way out, my ticket to freedom, and I put everything I had into reaching it. I lunged towards the light, throwing myself through the gap in the wall with a desperate cry. I tumbled out into the open air, landing hard on the overgrown grass outside the factory. For a moment, I just lay there, gasping for breath and waiting for the man to come bursting out after me. But he never did. Slowly, I picked myself up off the ground, my whole body shaking with adrenaline and fear. I looked back at the factory, expecting to see the man standing there in the doorway, but there was nothing. Just a dark, gaping hole of the entrance I had just busted through. I didn't stick around to see if he would come out. I got the hell out of there, running until I reached the safety of the main road. I eventually got back to my car and got the hell out of there as fast as I could. Looking back on it now, I still can't believe what happened that night. It feels like a bad dream, like something that couldn't possibly have been real, but I know it was. I can still feel the terror of that moment. Like I was literally being chased by a madman with a knife. I never went back there after that, and I never told anyone what happened either, not even my closest friends. I guess I was afraid they wouldn't believe me, or that they think I was crazy. But I know what I saw, and I know how close I came to becoming a victim. So here's some advice. Don't be an idiot like me by exploring abandoned places on your own. Always bring someone along, because you never know what might happen. I'm Jeff, and I've been an outdoorsman my whole life. There's something about being out in the wild, far from the noise and chaos of the city, that just feels right to me. It's not just a hobby, it's a way of life. I've tackled trails most weekend hikers wouldn't dream of, spent nights under the stars that were so clear it felt like you could reach out and touch the Milky Way. I'm not your run-of-the-mill camper or hiker, though. I pushed deeper into the forest, miles away from the nearest human, where the only sounds are the crackling of the fire and the distant calls of nocturnal animals. Besides the usual camping and hiking, I'm big into rock climbing and kayaking. These aren't just pastimes for me, they're essential parts of my life. Climbing gives me a perspective of the world that's hard to beat, hanging off a cliff face with nothing but strength and skill keeping you from the fall. Kayaking, on the other hand, is all about the rush of the water and navigating through the challenges it throws at you, making it back to shore with stories that sound like legends to anyone who wasn't there. Each trip in the wilderness is a new chapter, a story waiting to be told. And I've got plenty. Stories of close calls with wildlife, finding beauty in the most unexpected places, and the peace that comes with being truly alone out there. But there's one story that sticks out, one that I don't tell lightly. In my mind, this camping trip was going to be like the hundreds I've had previously. But as you're about to find out, that definitely wasn't the case. I was seeking that solitude, that connection with nature, but what I found was something far more chilling. It's not just a story of the wilderness, it's a reality check of the darkness that exists out there, beyond the reach of civilization's light. I had my camp all set up, tucked away deep in the woods where you could barely see your hand in front of your face without a campfire. The trek to the campsite was a long one, so I cooked myself dinner over the fire, then hit the sack early. Everything was normal, peaceful even, until I woke up out of nowhere. What got me up was a scream. Not from an animal, but a human scream. Far off, but clear enough to make the hair on the back of my neck stand up. At first, I thought maybe I was dreaming, but then it happened again, even louder this time. I didn't waste a second. I grabbed my flashlight and binoculars and headed towards the sound. I just kept walking in the direction where the screams were coming from. I killed the flashlight as I got closer, as I didn't want to make myself a target as well. Through the binoculars, I saw a scene that took my breath away for a minute. A group of guys were hauling a woman through the forest. She was fighting back hard, but they had her tight in their grip. It was clear as day, even in the dark. This wasn't an accident or someone getting lost. This was bad news, the kind you don't walk away from if you get mixed up in it. Realizing the gravity of the situation, my first instinct was to jump in, to do something, anything to help her. But then, reality hit me like a cold splash of water. I was out here alone, without a weapon, and those guys, they were armed. Not just with whatever they had used to grab her, but I could see the outline of guns. That's when it dawned on me. Getting involved could easily turn me into another victim. No one even knew I was out here. It was a tough pill to swallow, watching something like that unfold and feeling powerless to stop it. So, I made the hardest decision I ever had to make in my life. I turned around and headed back to my camp. My thoughts were frantic, trying to come up with a plan. I knew I had to get out of there fast, but also smart. I couldn't just run through the woods in the dark, not with those guys possibly nearby. I packed up my essentials in record time, leaving behind anything that would slow me down. Goosebumps erupted all over my skin as I made my way back to where I had parked my truck, taking a different, longer route to avoid running into them. The trek back to my truck was the longest of my life. Every rustle in the bushes, every snap of a twig underfoot, had me on high alert. By the time I saw the outline of my truck, I was running on adrenaline and fear. The moment I had any cell signal, I called the cops and reported what I saw. But deep down, I had a sinking feeling. I knew the chances of them finding her in time, if at all, were slim. It was a grim realization, one that's haunted me ever since that night. A few days had gone by. I tried to go about my life to push the memories to the back of my mind, but they were always there, lurking. Then, one night, I was out grabbing drinks with a few buddies of mine, trying to act like everything was normal. The place was crowded, loud music playing, people laughing and talking. It was the kind of scene where you think no bad news could ever reach you, but it did. One of my friends, not knowing what I'd been through, casually mentioned a story he saw on the news. A young woman's body was found in the forest, hung upside down from a tree and mutilated. My heart sank, and the noisy bar suddenly felt suffocating. I excused myself and stepped outside for some air. It took everything in me to keep myself together. After a few minutes, I went back inside, and that's when I broke the silence about that night. I told my friends everything I saw, how I felt, and the call to the cops. Their reactions were a mix of disbelief and horror. I could see it in their eyes. They were trying to process all the stuff I told them. It was the first time I had spoken about it out loud, and it felt like lifting a weight off my chest, but not enough to erase the guilt. I never heard back from law enforcement, not a word. That silence was almost as heavy as the guilt. I keep thinking about what could have changed if I had acted differently, if there was anything more I could have done. It's a question that eats away at me until this very day. This world can be a very dark place. I have to keep reminding myself that despite our best efforts, we can't always protect the innocent. That night in the woods took something from me. It made me realize that no matter how much you think you know the wilderness, there's always something more, something lurking beyond the safety of the firelight. Three years ago, during my first year on the job, I was working on the graveyard shift at the cemetery. It was the kind of job you'd expect to be uneventful, especially at night. But this one night, something happened that I still can't fully explain. I was driving through the cemetery, just doing my usual patrol in the dead of night. The air was crisp, and the only sound was the gravel crunching under the tires of my patrol vehicle. Everything was normal until I spotted an older man walking down the path ahead of me, his back to my approaching vehicle. At first, I was startled. It's not often you see anyone in a cemetery at night, let alone an elderly man strolling like it was a park. As I slowed down, the old man stopped, turned around, and waved at me with a smile that seemed too friendly for the situation. Hesitantly, I stepped out of the vehicle. I remember thinking how out of place he looked, not just because of the setting, but there was something off about him that I couldn't put my finger on. He greeted me warmly, talking about how beautiful the autumn night was, as if it was perfectly normal to be walking through a cemetery in the middle of the night. I tried to tell him he shouldn't be there, but he just brushed it off politely and started sharing war stories as if we were old friends catching up. He launched into stories from his time in Vietnam. It was surreal, standing there in the cold, listening to tales from a war I'd only seen in movies. He talked about the jungles, how thick and unforgiving they were, like a whole other world where visibility was a luxury and danger lurked behind every leaf. He laughed a bit when he mentioned the monsoon rains, how they'd get so drenched that you couldn't tell sweat from rainwater anymore. He shared a story about a night patrol gone wrong, where they walked into an ambush. It was intense. He described the fear, the confusion, and how they relied on each other to make it out. But then, he lightened the mood with a tale about how they played pranks on their sergeant to keep morale up, even in the middle of a war zone. The way he spoke about his squad was touching, really. He called them his brothers, said they shared a bond that was hard to explain unless you were there. He talked about the laughter, the tears, and the silent moments when words weren't needed. It was hard to reconcile the peaceful, elderly man in front of me with the young soldier he once was, fighting for his life in the jungles of Vietnam. Listening to him, I felt a mix of respect and sadness, wondering about the memories that haunted him and the camaraderie that sustained him through the war. After sharing his Vietnam War stories, the old man's mood shifted slightly, and he suggested we head back, saying he'd like a ride to the cemetery's exit. I agreed, thinking it was about time to wrap up this unexpected meeting. As I turned to head towards the patrol vehicle, I felt a cold chill run down my back. Not from the cold, but from the abrupt change in atmosphere. The night suddenly felt heavier, quieter. When I glanced back to say something to the old man, he was gone, vanished. I thought, no way, not this fast, considering how slowly he had been moving earlier. Puzzled, I quickly got into the patrol car and scanned the area with my high beams. Then I jumped back out with my flashlight and started sweeping the beam across the tombstones and trees, expecting to catch him limping away. But there was nothing, no sign of him anywhere. It made no sense. The area was too open, he couldn't have covered much ground that quickly, especially with how he was walking before. I remember standing there, in the middle of the graveyard, feeling a mix of confusion and dread. It was like one of those moments when the world doesn't seem to follow the rules you know. I admit to being pretty nervous, but mainly confused. I kept scanning the area, still expecting him to reappear and laugh off my concern. But he didn't. The silence of the cemetery was pretty overwhelming, and I realized I was truly alone. That night, the drive back to the security office was the longest ever. I couldn't shake off the feeling that something out of the ordinary had just happened. The next day, I couldn't keep what happened to myself and ended up sharing the story with my coworkers. I half expected them to laugh it off or think I was seeing things after too many hours in the dark, but the reaction I got was far from it. Instead, there was this eerie silence before one of them, a guy who'd been working there way longer than I had, said he'd seen the old man too. Not just once, but a couple of times over the years. Each time, the old man would vanish just as inexplicably as he had with me. Turns out, this wasn't anything new. Other guards had similar encounters, each with the same unsettling ending. Hearing that gave me chills all over again. It wasn't just my imagination. Others had experienced the same thing. We ended up swapping stories, and it became clear that this old man, whoever or whatever he was, had become a sort of legend among the night shift. Some thought he might be the ghost of a soldier, forever returning to where he felt most at peace. Others joked that he was just a local who liked messing with us. But joking aside, none of us could explain how he moved so fast, or why he only appeared on certain nights. That experience changed how I viewed my night patrols. I started seeing the cemetery not just as a place of rest, but as a ground where the past didn't always stay buried. It was my first year on the job, but that night made sure I never forget the reality that sometimes the things we can't explain are the most haunting.